National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back, Jack. And it is 4-1.
On that ball. Jackson has it. The All-American tight end is going in. And Oklahoma takes the lead on a 71-yard touchdown play.
I was going to rip his heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lex is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody as ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm from there.
Yo. And welcome back to the Fix Sports Podcast, the number one sports podcast in the world, right here on the Freedom Train Network, the realest and the blackest sports podcast you have ever heard in your life, coming straight from the south, going down already. I am your host, Joseph Ward, and as you know, I give you your weekly fix of sports from a black perspective. The audio shop talk as I give it to you how you need it. You dig. All right. So remember, the Fix Sports Podcast is sponsored by On the Shoulders of Giants, which brings you African history at your fingertips and on the go. And they deliver that information through various means, such as an African history book series, a blog series, a YouTube channel, an African history curriculum app, which is available in the Google Play Store, a nonprofit organization, as well as coming out to your organization, your school, your house, whatever, and doing educational classes, lectures, seminars, workshops, all those different things. So for more information, you can visit www.ontheshoulders1.com, as well as learn more about the On the Shoulders of Giants nonprofit organization by visiting www.ontheshoulders.org. Yes, y'all, and you don't stop until the beat rock down and you don't stop. I say yes, y'all, and you don't stop until the beat rock down and you don't stop. Now, this day on the Fix. Now, rock with me while we end the mix as I give you a rundown of the topics that I'm going to give and no stop. My spotlight is going to FAMU softball, the state of growing. I got some HBCU news about Hampton. They're giving to me yet the blues. Let me stop. So, HBCU spotlight is being shined on FAMU women's softball team. So we're going to tell you what they have done to receive the spotlight. HBCU news, Hampton and the MEAC reached a separation agreement. So Hampton is officially shooting the deuces to the MEAC. Going to give you an update on the men's and women's NCAA tournament because the championship games are set and we got some upsets. Okay. LiAngelo Ball declares for the NBA draft. Okay. We're going to talk about that. LiAngelo Ball and the NBA draft. Okay. Lonzo Ball, we're going to do an evaluation on Lonzo Ball's first season in the NBA so far. We have the 2018 NBA Hall of Fame inductees, so give you the newest class of the NBA, or excuse me, not the NBA Hall of Fame, the Basketball Hall of Fame. The Basketball Hall of Fame, the 2018 class. Tiger Woods, we got to talk about Tiger. Has he been getting better? And that Masters is coming up, so they say Tiger playing pretty good, so Tiger might got a shot at doing something, so we got to talk about Tiger. Baseball back. So baseball opening day happened on Friday, I believe. So we are going to talk about baseball for a little bit. Going to do a little NFL mock draft, a little preview, a little mock draft, give you the draft positions of the teams and potential people that they could draft. All right. So found out that NFL teams are actually giving Johnny Manziel a look. They're showing up to his throwing sessions, and ain't nobody showing up to camps. Yeah, so we're going to talk about that. The Rams, the Los Angeles Rams, are looking like they might be the favorite to win the Super Bowl. They might be one of the favorites, the Rams, the Eagles, and the Vikings. I mean, sheesh. So we'll tell you what acquisitions the Rams made to make me say this, right? So the NFL has passed a new catch rule, what we call the Dez Bryant rule. So we're going to get into that because I got to go off on that. And my weekly rant is being aimed at a columnist that worked for CBS Sports who named Vince Young the biggest bust of the BCS era. So I got to go in on Buddy because just saying Vince Young is the biggest bust of the BCS era, that's stupid. But his explanation even more stupid. So we're going to go in on all of that. You dig? All right. So let's get into our HBCU Spotlight. And as I said, our HBCU Spotlight is aimed at the Florida A&M University women's softball team because they basically played a triple header against South Carolina State over the weekend on the 30th and the 31st. They played a triple header. And they defeated South Carolina State women's softball team three times. The first game on the 30th, FAMU won 8-1. The second game, FAMU won 5-4. And the third game, FAMU won 4-3. And so I just want to show them some love for what they was doing out here on this good softball field. You dig? So let's make sure we're showing our love to FAMU women's softball team like we're supposed to. So little man in the shirt, let's go ahead and get the people ready and get them up off their feet, get that round of applause for the Florida A&M University women's softball program for defeating the South Carolina State Bulldogs women's softball team in their triple header. As they came to town to Tallahassee, Florida, fam, you said, nah, y'all ain't gonna come to our house. I think y'all gonna go back to the win. So, one time for FAMU women's softball team for the wins, for the three wins in 2 days over the South Carolina State women's softball team. All right, so let's move on to some HBCU news. We got a lot to get to today. So, this article's headline reads, MEAC and Hampton reach agreeable terms of separation. So remember a couple months ago, I told you guys that Hampton was leaving the MEAC. They signed the papers, they put the papers in, did everything they needed to do to be able to leave the MEAC to go to another conference. So let's give you a little update on it. So the Council of Executive Officers of the Mid-Eastern Athletic Conference and Hampton University have come to an amicable agreement with regards to Hampton's resignation from the conference. Hampton University consents to a fine of an undisclosed amount for failing to meet the MEAC's July 1st deadline for withdrawal from the conference. The MEAC and Hampton University have agreed to terms that are fair to both parties. This agreement allows for Hampton University and MEAC members institutions to play as non-conference opponents in the future and preserves the traditional rivalries held dear by stakeholders of both Hampton University and the MEAC. Hampton University values our relationships with the MEAC, and I believe this agreement is the best for all parties going forward, said Dr. William R. Harvey, president of Hampton University. This agreement is not only what's best for Hampton University and the MEAC, but it's what's best for our collective state, students, alumni, boosters, and fans. We're very pleased with the agreement reached between the MEAC and Hampton University, said Dr. Dennis E. Thomas, MEAC Commissioner, to which Hampton University, student, athletes, coaches, and staff critique success in their future endeavors. I like how they always say, we wish you continued success in your future endeavors. I like when people say that. It's funny. So Hampton is moving on. Hampton is moving all the way on. So it is what it is, man. I'm not mad at Hampton. I can't even blame Hampton for doing what they got to do to put more money in their pockets and to boost their brand as an HBCU to be able to do what they need to do. So I just hope the MEAC can survive and we see what's going on, but most of all, black college football needs to improve. So I ain't mad at Hampton. So Hampton, y'all do y'all thing. Matter of fact, Hampton, we're going to give y'all a round of applause for completing this MEAC in an amicable way. And to move on to your new conference and your new endeavors, well, we wish you much success in your future. Hear, hear to Hampton. Hear, hear. I just had to wild out like that. So, that's our HBCU spotlight, and that also is our HBCU news. So, next, we want to talk about some basketball. Talk about the basketball tournament. Talk about the men. I want to talk about the women. Because, like I said, the championship game, I'm talking like I got a list right now, because the championship game's a set. So let me give you what happened in the Final Fours, and then we can go to the championship game. So the first Final Four matchup was Loyola, Illinois out of Chicago versus Michigan. Loyola, Illinois is 11 seed. Michigan is the 3 seed. So first half, it was a little back and forth. You know, Loyola hanging in there. Matter of fact, through most of the game, it was a back and forth game because the score was 69-57. So Michigan, as the 3 seed, defeated the 11 seed Loyola, Illinois, 69-57. So Michigan center got hot and he started balling. And Michigan started separating from Loyola with like 3 minutes to go in the second half. They just started separating. And Loyola couldn't really stop what Michigan was doing. And so hard-fought game. Definitely a better game than the Villanova-Kansas thing. Definitely a better game than that. But Loyola met a team who was just superior to them. And though Loyola is a good team, Michigan was just superior. Now, it makes me wonder that, dang, if Florida State possibly could have been in the national championship game, if they weren't bullshitting. Florida State went 10 minutes without scoring a basket against Michigan and only lost by 4 points. So, you know, that's neither here nor there. I'm just saying that that's neither here nor there. But Michigan comes out with the victory over Loyola. And so Michigan is sitting in the championship game waiting to see who's next. So next is Villanova versus Kansas. So this game is interesting because it's two number one seeds and also two of the finalists for the Naismith Awards, both point guards for both teams. And now y'all know I'm bad with names. I'm horrible with names. But Villanova gave Kansas the business. I'm talking about the business. So basically, Graham from Kansas is the point guard that I'm talking about. And you also had Azubuike from Kansas who, you know, he did his thing. But so Graham, number four, Graham had 23 points. Newman from Kansas had 21 points. Azubuike had 8. Vic had 8. Number 10, Esmihalgulik, had 10. D'Souza had 7. And Jay Soniski, he had 2. So, but it wasn't enough to stop the onslaught that was Villanova. So, I mean, look at, like, Villanova hit 18 three-pointers in the game. Villanova hit 18 three-pointers in the game. I'm just saying. So, Brunson, Villanova's point guard, had 18 points. Spellman for Villanova had 15 points. Booth had 10 points. Bridges had 10 points. Pascal had 24 points. DiVincenzo had 15 points. Gillespie had 3. They had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Villanova had 6 people in double digits. And their height, that the person who had the most points, who was Pascal, not even their best player. Let me say it again. Spellman had 15. Brunson, player of the year, 18. Booth, 10. Bridges, 10. Pascal, 24. DiVincenzo, 15. So, you know, Brunson and Graham, player of the year finalists, right? Naismith finalists, but Brunson and his squad came to play. Final score was 95-79. I mean, it was like Kansas couldn't even get within. They couldn't get within 12 points of these boys, seemed like, man. I don't know. Like, this was not a game. It was a slaughter. Villanova showed up with a Gatling gun. Kansas had little blow dart shooters. Shooting the little blow darts while Villanova then put the Gatling gun on the tripod and cranking that thing out. Tearing Kansas up. So, with that being said, we have a Michigan and Villanova championship game that's going down on Monday night. So, we will see. Now, it's going to be interesting because Michigan ain't soft. Michigan ain't soft, but, you know, that Villanova team nice. That Villanova team nice. They're strong at the point guard. They're strong at the guard positions. The Michigan good, too. So we got number one versus number three championship game going down on Monday night. So y'all got to make sure y'all check it out. So, man, basketball, this is the best time to watch basketball, though. I'm not going to lie. I don't watch it much during the regular season, but especially when they get to Sweet 16, Elite 8. Hey, man, it's time to start watching. It's time to start locking in because now we got real basketball. Now we got real basketball. So Villanova in Michigan. I did not see this coming, but it happened. Villanova and Michigan in the championship game. But it's also a good reminder that Florida State could be playing Villanova in the championship game. So there it is. So let's talk about the women. Because now the thing about the women's side is we could say we got upsets, but looking at the final fours, you have number one Louisville versus number one Mississippi State, and then number one UConn versus number one Notre Dame. So there's really no upsets outside of saying, well, such and such beat UConn because UConn be undefeated all the time. So how did this Elite Eight happen, right? So the Sweet 16, I think I covered the Sweet 16, but, you know, just a little recap. Sweet 16, Mississippi State defeated number four, North Carolina State, 71-57. Number six, Oregon State defeated number two, Baylor, 72-67. Number three, UCLA defeated number two, Texas, 84-75. Number one, Louisville beat number four, Stanford, 86-59. South Carolina beat number 11, Buffalo, 63-79. Number one, UConn beat number five, Duke, 72-59. Number one, Notre Dame beat number four, Texas A&M, 90-84. Number two, Oregon beat number 11, Central Michigan, 83-69. Then we had the Elite Eight. Number one, Louisville defeated number six, Oregon State, 76-43. Number one, Mississippi State with a little cutie pie, itty bitty. They beat number three, UCLA, 89-73. Number one, UConn defeated number two, South Carolina, 94-65. Number one, Notre Dame beat number two, Oregon, 84-74. Then we got the Final Four. So the Final Four was number one, Louisville versus number one, Mississippi State. Mississippi State came out on top with the victory over Louisville 73-63. The little cutie pie, itty bitty, and other players from Mississippi State, they said, you know what? We are not only going to, like, we got to go back. We got to go back because, remember, Mississippi State beat UConn last year with that last-second shot. Itty bitty hit the last-second shot to prepare Mississippi State to the championship. Let me stop saying championship. To the championship game against South Carolina last year. You know, South Carolina won the championship, and Don Staley got her first ring as a coach. So this year, Mississippi State beat number one Louisville in overtime. So they had to take it into overtime because, you know, Louisville is good. I mean, they're both number one seeds. But Mississippi State was able to pull it out by 10, 73-63 in overtime. And then Notre Dame and UConn comes down to the final seconds in overtime, because this is another overtime game. UConn had the chance to win it at in the regulation, and it wasn't, you know, they didn't win. Go into overtime, and I forgot the I'm gonna remember the young lady's name, but the young lady hit the last second shot. Ogunbowale hit the last second shot, and that pushed Notre Dame over UConn because she hit a 3-pointer to put her up, to put Notre Dame up to 91-89, and that allowed Notre Dame to win the game. So Ogunbowale had 27 points, and, you know, that 27th, you know, those last 3 points were the game winner. Young had 32, Shepherd had 15, Westfeld had 8, Mabry had 7, Nelson had 2. These are the players from Notre Dame. But that Ogunbowale, she was hitting daggers all day. They couldn't stop her. UConn couldn't stop Ogunbowale, and UConn was making mistakes. And so for UConn, Collier had 24, Williams had 12, Nurse had 10, Samuelson had 16, Dangerfield had 8, Stevens had 9. With UConn, man, when UConn lose, when UConn women's lose, a couple things happen. Two of the things that I've noticed happen, because I've seen, I like to watch UConn play, and I've seen them win and lose. When they win, when they're challenged, especially these last two teams, when teams come out and they're not scared of UConn, UConn bust them in their mouth and they bust them right back, sometimes UConn don't know how to deal with that. And when they don't know how to deal with that, they turn the ball over. And they don't play with the same pace and intensity, and they lose. They still play good, but they lose because they don't play with the same intensity and pace that they normally play with when they win. So that's one of the things I was able to really see. Now, I didn't watch the whole game. Matter of fact, I didn't even watch this Connecticut game, but I was able to see the highlights and things. But going back and looking at the different films and the highlights and the game information, UConn, when they don't play like they're supposed to play, they lose. And shout out to Notre Dame and Mississippi State, because that is the women's championship game, and it's going down Sunday at 6 p.m. So make sure you strap it in, because itty bitty going to take her team in there to play Ogunbowale, and we're going to see who come out. I want to see Mississippi State win. I want to see my little cutie pie itty bitty win. I want to see them. I also want to see the SEC win back-to-back women's national championships. I do, because, you know, South Carolina brought it home last year. I want to see Mississippi State bring home this year. So that, I really do want to see that. So since UConn ain't going to be in it. But that's our men's and our women's NCAA tournament. And so, you know, that's how it's going down. That's how it's going down. So make sure y'all tune in and check out the goodness that is the NCAA tournament going down. Boom. That's today's transition music. So next on the agenda is LiAngelo Ball declares for the NBA draft. Yeah. So let's get into it, right? LiAngelo, what you gonna do? What you gonna do if they do draft you? But if they don't, you're gonna go back to Lithuania. We know that. So LiAngelo Ball, the middle brother, and the least impressive basketball prospect of the trio, has declared for the 2018 NBA draft, according to Yahoo Sports' Shams Charania. So this is an article by SB Nation, by Tim Cato of SB Nation. And this is how he is starting the article off. The 19-year-old is currently playing basketball in Lithuania for the Vuja, the Vytautas. They're for the Vytautas in Lithuania, along with his 16-year-old brother, LaMelo. This is a no-brainer move for LiAngelo Ball, but there are no expectations that he will be selected in either round this June, despite his social media fame. Before he was detained for shoplifting in China during a preseason trip, Ball was slated to come off the bench for the UCLA Bruins this season, which is very true. This is a very short list of players. There's a very short list of players who are drafted despite coming off the bench for their college team. They usually involve circumstances that didn't apply to Ball. After the shoplifting charges and the indefinite suspension, Ball left UCLA, which led to his time overseas in Lithuania. In nine games, he only played nine games. In nine games, he averaged 16 points, three rebounds, and less than one assist, despite being held scoreless in his debut, all while shooting 44% from the floor and 45% behind the arc. This league, Lithuania's LKL, was ranked the 11th best non-NBA league a few years ago. Ball's declaration for the NBA draft won't affect his status on the club team, barring an NBA combine invite. He can continue playing games up until June when his teams pick or don't pick him with one of the 60 overall selections. Now, they say he dropped 71 points the other day in the game, one of the Lithuanian games, but they was also trying to discredit that, saying that he was playing against a youth team. So, but you know, I do want to throw that point. He dropped 71. So now it's asking, is there any chance of him being drafted by the Lakers? I don't think so. First of all, I don't see why the Lakers would draft him. I just don't. I really don't see why the Lakers would need to draft him. So let's look at the draft lottery. Well, right now it's saying 10th via Philadelphia. So the 10th pick in the draft, they're going to get LiAngelo Ball. I don't see LiAngelo getting drafted by the Lakers or even picked up. I don't see LiAngelo getting drafted. That's just me. I really don't see LiAngelo getting drafted. But nevertheless, LiAngelo has declared for the draft. So let's read further. The argument for why the Lakers would consider him is simple. LaVar Ball insists on it. Now, I personally don't care about LaVar Ball insisting that the Lakers should draft him. I personally don't care about LaVar Ball's idle threats of picking up his ball and his son and going home if the Lakers don't draft LiAngelo. First of all, Lonzo is under contract. So Lonzo is going to be a Laker to the contract, though, no matter what LaVar says. Second of all, I just don't see why the Lakers need to draft LiAngelo Ball. I'm not sure. Because LaVar's ultimate goal is to have all three of his sons on the Lakers. I mean, LaVar Ball also going to have to get to the realization that all three of his sons ain't good enough to be on the Lakers. But also, LaVar Ball got to realize that All three, like, you don't run nothing in the NBA. You ain't got no clout. You ain't run nothing. And your son, the one that's in the NBA, he's good, but he ain't that good for you to think you got some clout to be talking like that, right? So that's just me. Back in February, the elder Ball said Lonzo Ball would leave the Lakers if they don't sign his brothers. Yeah. The Lakers have team control over Lonzo Ball's contract to the 2020-2021 season because that's how every contract works for first-round picks. When Ball comes up in free agency in 2021, he will be a restricted free agent, which gives the Lakers right to match any offer sheet that Ball would sign. Sure, Ball could refuse to play or raise media attention or do any number of things to try to force the Lakers' hand. But has Lonzo Ball at any point given indication he's like his dad enough that he would demand his brothers to be signed? At best, I could see the Lakers extending a summer league invite to LaMelo Ball, perhaps even signing him to their G League team. But if he's simply not good enough, at most indications are that he's not, then even that would be an insult to the actual G League players who do deserve a look and bring unwanted attention down to the kid who's just trying to get good enough at basketball to turn into a career. It's not fair to anyone involved except the Ball patriarch, I guess, who gets to gloat. And like I said, this is an article from Tim Cato. Now, I just don't think that LiAngelo Ball is that good of a basketball player at this point in his career to be drafted by the Lakers. He's not one-and-done type talent. He's not. LaVar wants him to be, but he's not. Like I say, he's coming off the bench at UCLA. So he wasn't good enough to start at UCLA. Now all of a sudden you are NBA ready. There's nothing special about LiAngelo. Six five, two something. Got a pretty decent 3-point shot. But you know, if he wasn't the Ball brother, would you really be giving him the attention as a basketball player? If he was just a basketball player and he wasn't a part of the Ball trio, would he really be getting looked at? Nope. So let's just be real what I said. Let's just be real. Now, moving on. We're moving on to our evaluation. As we're going to keep the ball rolling. You dig? Keep the ball rolling as we talk about Lonzo Ball and kind of evaluate Lonzo Ball's first season. He averaged 10 points a game. 7 assists a game, 6, might as well say 7, 10, 7, and 7. Lonzo, 10, 7, and 7. His play efficiency rating is 12.5. I don't know about player efficiency ratings and stuff like that. I just go off of what I see. Lonzo is a good basketball player, but Lonzo is not transcendent. He's not. So far, he's not franchise-changing. It seems he's the third or fourth best player on his team thus far. Kuzma, Ingram, Randle, you know, I would say are better than Lonzo. But Lonzo does play an intricate part. He is a unique talent. He does have a nice basketball IQ. He's a little soft. He's a rookie, but he's a little soft, a little timid. He needs to be a little more aggressive. His shot sucks. His free throws suck. Three-pointers suck. So, you know, he will hit shots from time to time. I know Skip Bayless got excited because for a certain number of games, maybe 10 to 16 games, Lonzo is pretty good behind 3-point line, but for the rest of the season, Lonzo wasn't. And he went back to being regular and he's hurt again. He has a knee issue. So he's played 52 games, started 50 games, averaged 34 minutes a game. There's a 36 field goal percentage. His 3-point percentage is 30. His free throw percentage is 45. That's horrible. Like I say, average 7 rebounds, 7 assists, almost a block a game, 1 steal a game, 2 turnovers, maybe 3, and 10 points a game. That's what he averages. Now, those are not great number 2 draft pick overall numbers. But at the same time, Lonzo Ball is playing a lot better than like a Markelle Fultz or some of these other cats that got drafted around him. Ben Simmons and a young man from Utah are balling, though. So even in Lonzo's class, and of course we know Ben Simmons was officially drafted last year, but he didn't play, so this year is his official rookie year. Or you could say unofficial rookie year. But Ben Simmons and the young man in Utah are having better rookie seasons than Lonzo Ball. So if I had to give him a grade, I'd give him a C. I give Lonzo a C. Lonzo ain't playing good, but Lonzo, he can pass. Lonzo passed the class at this college. You know, in college, if you get a D, you got to take the class over. He passed the class. He ain't got to take the class over, but it wasn't nothing special about his season. You know what I'm saying? He had one game where he was like, shit. You know, he had that 29-point triple-double against the Suns. But it was nothing special about Lonzo's first season. But you know me, I'm always like, hey, man, let's see what happens next year. Let's see what happens. I give people 3-4 years, man. Don't be good 1 year. Or don't be garbage 1 year. You know, let's give people time to grow and mature, things like that. So that's my little quick evaluation on Lonzo Ball's season, his first season as a rookie. All right, so now we're going to talk about the 2018 not NBA, I keep wanting to say NBA, but the 2018 Basketball Hall of Fame inductee. So we got the full class. You know, the headliners of the class were Ray Allen, Steve Nash, Jason Kidd, Grant Hill, Maurice Cheeks. Those are the well-known. You know, those are the ones that they chose to be the face of the class. Basically, that's what happened. But nevertheless, major shouts out to Grant Hill for making it to the Basketball Hall of Fame. Man, after them foot injuries, you didn't know what was going to happen with Grant Hill. But Grant Hill persevered. And Grant Hill's, let me just say this about Grant Hill's story real quick, because I often get frustrated because I do a lot, right, between the books that I've written, podcasts that I do, the information that I have to give, my gift of gab, my speaking ability, all the things that I do, and it be up and down a lot. It be up and down, and, you know, you're working and you're wishing and you're hoping and you're working and you're grinding, trying to make sure you think positive, even though everything seems like, it's just like whatever right now. Like, I don't even know. It'd be like, I don't even know sometimes. But somebody like Grant Hill was also in a similar situation with his foot, where his whole career could have been over. But Grant kept going. Grant kept pushing. Grant came back, made a comeback, was able to play more seasons in the NBA, and now he's in the Basketball Hall of Fame. So the total class is Steve Nash, Jason Kidd, Grant Hill, Ray Allen, Maurice Cheeks, Charlie Scott, Tina Thompson, Tina Thompson, Katie Smith, Ora Mae Washington, Rick Welts, Rick Welts, Rod Thorne, Lefty Dressel, whoever Lefty Dressel is, and European player Dino Rada. Those are the people who are in the class. Chris Webber and Rudy T did not make it, but hey. So, now Grant Hill, seven-time NBA All-Star, he played 19 seasons. You know, he won two championships with Duke. And what I do like about the Basketball Hall of Fame is it's based off your total basketball career, not just your professional basketball career, unlike the NFL Hall of Fame, which is just like the NFL Hall of Fame. But this is the Basketball Hall of Fame, so, you know. Steve Nash, you know, he had his back-to-back MVPs in 2005, 2006, even though everybody knows 2006, Kobe Bryant had the best season in the NBA, but whatever. So, Jason Kidd won the NBA championship with the Mavericks, finally. 10-time All-Star, one of the greatest point guards ever. Maurice Cheeks helped lead the 76ers to an NBA championship over the Lakers back in the days. He played 15 seasons, 5-time All-Star. He was a head coach. Tina Thompson played for the Houston Rockets team that were balling out back in the day because nobody stopped them with them lips and that lipstick. Looking good, Tina Thompson. So once again, the 2018 Basketball Hall of Fame inductees are Steve Nash, Jason Kidd, Grant Hill, Ray Allen, Maurice Cheeks, Charlie Scott, Tina Thompson, Katie Smith, Ora Mae Washington, Rick Welts, Rod Thorne, Lefty Dressel, and European player Dino Rada. So I want to give a big round of applause to 2018 Basketball Hall of Fame. Tiger Woods, y'all. It's all good, y'all. Tiger Woods, y'all. It's all good, y'all. I like champagne. Y'all remember that? Chris Rock. I like champagne. I drink it in the rain. So, Tiger Woods. Let me read y'all this article by the New York Times. In the past few weeks, Tiger Woods has made a seemingly improbable comeback on the golf course. But can his image rebound the same way? That is the question that brands and advertisers are posing as Mr. Woods returned to the Masters on Thursday for the first time since 2015. While playing his best golfing years, the past month has brought swelling television ratings and overcrowded rowdy galleries for Mr. Woods' PGA Tour appearances because Tiger got that juice. And no matter what, on that golf course, when Tiger write, he write, Tiger got that juice. Tiger is the only golf player who got the juice like that. All the rest of them got sauce. Now, remember, sauce is manufactured. Juice is organic. When you got the juice, you got it. You born with that shit. Sauce, you can go buy it. And it could be manufactured. It could be fabricated. It could be fake. It could. Sauce can mimic other people's shit. But juice, when you got the juice, you are unique. You are original. You are natural because you either got the juice or you don't. So, now, Tiger finished in the second place tie at the Valspar Championship in early March, at one point sinking a 44-foot birdie putt that had the crowd screaming, "Tiger, Tiger, Tiger, Tiger," right? Television ratings for the final round, Television ratings for the final round were the highest for a non-major tournament since 2013. For a time, the streaming service of PGA Tour Live crashed because of unprecedented traffic. That's what Tiger does. All this is invoking memories of the unprecedented fan interest that made Mr. Woods one of the most recognized and influential athletes for more than a decade, worth $90 billion per year in endorsement contracts alone. $90 million, excuse me. It's worth $90 million worth endorsements alone. But it has been a while. The fallout from the 2019 Get Caught Cheating scandal cost him endorsement deals with Gatorade, AT&T, General Motors, and Gillette, among others. The few companies that stood by him, namely Nike, did so despite multiple injury-plagued and underwhelming seasons. Since 2010, Mr. Woods has 8 PGA Tour tournaments. Since 2010, Mr. Woods has 8 PGA Tour wins after winning 71 times in the 14 previous seasons. He has a little bit of wind in his sails, said David Carter, a professional of sports business at the University of Southern California. The key is going to be, can he win? Can he stay healthy? Can he stay out of trouble? If he can do that and remain competitive, then I think the big brands will return. I mean, it ain't about Tiger staying out of trouble. You know, Tiger ain't do nothing but get caught cheating. Let's just be real. Let's stop acting like Tiger then murdered somebody or something like that. Tiger got caught cheating. Right. The same thing happened to Michael Jordan in the 90s, but the difference is there was no big fallout and social media rampage and all these things. Michael Jordan got caught cheating by Juanita in the 90s, and he ain't lose his brands like Tiger did, because Tiger only got caught cheating. All right. Let's stop that. Yes, it was horrible, but he only got caught cheating. Let's stop acting like Tiger killed the baby. You know what I'm saying? Like, let's start acting like Tiger R. Kelly or something like that, right? So, some brands had already bet on Tiger Woods' comeback, even when it looked unlikely. Bridgestone reached out to Mr. Woods about playing in its golf ball in September 2016, shortly after Nike announced that it would no longer be selling golf equipment, though it will continue its Woods brand and clothesline. It barely mattered that Mr. Woods had appeared in a tournament in 13 months. Now, that's just how live Tiger Woods is Nike's golf brand just went off the shelf because Tiger Woods weren't balling no more. But I'm not going to read this article no more. But all in all, I just want to say Tiger Woods back out there doing his thing. And the biggest thing with Tiger was him getting his mind right and getting his health right, getting his back right. Got to get his back so he can get that stroke right in and out the bedroom and on and off the golf course, right? You got to have your back right so that stroke could be right. If the stroke ain't right, then you ain't hitting on nothing. Double entendres busting in your forehead, because if your stroke ain't right, you ain't going to hit the hole in one. You dig? So keep your eye out for Tiger Woods. You know they got that Masters going on. You know the Masters be going on every Sunday. So if you're not watching, tune in. If it's already been happening, make sure you go check out the stats and see what Tiger did in the Masters. Tiger Woods, y'all. It's all good, y'all. Tiger, 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 Tiger. I like champagne. If we bring it, I like champagne. I drink it in the rain. I like champagne. All right. Baseball back. If you care, baseball is back. And opening day happened on Friday. All right. So let's do a little. Let me tell you about a couple of these games that happened. We ain't going to go too far into the baseball thing because, you know, baseball, just like the NCAA tournament, don't really, really, really matter until the playoffs start, until they get around to that playoff race, to the hunt for Red October. So, you know, but I'll keep you updated on certain things and stories surrounding baseball, but we ain't going to really, really, really get into the numbers unless we need to. So, one of the first games, opening day, the Pittsburgh Pirates against the Detroit Tigers. Interesting game, high-scoring game. The Pirates won 13-10. And this game took 13 innings. Then we had the Washington Nationals with a 2-0 victory over the Cincinnati Reds. New York Yankees had a 4-2 victory over the Toronto Blue Jays. The Boston Red Sox had a 1-0 victory over the Tampa Bay Rays. The Miami Marlins beat the Chicago Cubs 2-1 and 17-0. Philadelphia Phillies beat the Atlanta Braves. The Braves is my squad. The Phillies beat the Braves 5-4 11 innings. Texas Rangers beat the Astros 5-1. Arizona Diamondbacks beat the Colorado Rockies 9-8. Los Angeles Angels beat the Oakland A's 2-1. The Milwaukee Brewers beat the San Diego Padres 8-6. And the San Francisco Giants beat the Los Angeles Dodgers 1-0. So one of the headlines is David Price. So they're saying David Price dominated in his debut. And remember, the Red Sox played the Rays, right? And so David Price had 7 innings pitched, 4 hits, zero runs, 0 walks, and 5 Ks. And Price threw only 76 pitches Friday night, so I doubt that would be the new normal. It was his first start, and teams tend to be very careful with their starters right out of the spring training, especially when the guy's coming back from an arm injury like Price. But to be safe than sorry, you know. So David Price, they got a quick little video that they showing on this thing that I'm looking at. Bow! David Price throwing that thing on that inside. Bow! That batter just swinging at the bow. He can't get that. Price is hitting that thing to that inside part of that. Bow! Now he caught him on the outside. The boy just swinging, made that boy check swing. Ooh. Hey, Price. Price tossing that. Bow! Tossing that pill across that plate. Price looked good, though. He looked good throwing that ball. And he killing Buddy on the inside part of that plate. He murking Buddy on that plate. So, one time for David Price for coming back. Hey, man. So, also, the San Francisco, the other headline, the San Francisco Giants and the Los Angeles Dodgers, right? So, this says, Cueto flirts with perfection. Because Madison Bumgarner's injury happened late in spring training, the Giants didn't have enough time to rearrange their rotation and give Johnny Cueto the opening day start. It instead went to Ty Black, who threw 6 shutout innings against the Dodgers en route to a team's 1-0 win. On Friday, Cueto made his first start. Okay, so Ty Black did his thing in opening day. So Cueto on Friday made his first start of the season, and it was magnificent. He retired the first 18 batters he faced and lost his perfect game being in the 7th inning when Chris Taylor flared a leadoff single to center. Cueto erased the base runner with a double play 2 pitches later. His final pitching line, he went 7 innings, 1 hit, 4 Ks, no walks. So that's what's up. A little baseball update, whatever, man. So all my baseball heads, man, don't worry. We're going to talk about it, but just not right now. We got a lot of time to talk about it. We got 176,000 more games to go. All right, so NFL draft preview. The NFL draft is rapidly coming upon us. It is April now, and, you know, April Fool's in the past, Easter's in the past. Hey, y'all don't think it's weird that Easter was on April Fool's Day? It's the universe trying to tell us something, because Easter is never on the same day. I thought he died once, but never mind. So this is basically the draft order that's going to happen. So the Cleveland Browns have the number 1 and number 4 picks in the first round. The Giants have the 2nd, the Jets have the 3rd, the Broncos have the 5th, the Colts have the 6th, the Bucks have the 7th, the Bears have the 8th, the 49ers 9, the Raiders 10, Dolphins 11, Bills 12, Redskins 13, Packers are 14, the Cardinals are 15, the Ravens 16, Chargers 17, Seattle Seahawks are 18, my Cowboys 19, the Detroit Lions are 20, Bengals 21, Bills are 22. So the Bills also have two picks in the first round. The Rams 23, Panthers 24, Titans 25, Falcons 26, Saints 27, Steelers 28, Jaguars 29, Vikings 30th, Patriots 31st, and then the Eagles are 32nd. So, all right, so this is the NFL.com mock draft, and these are predictions by Bucky Brooks, Charles Davis, Peter Scherzer, and Lance Zierlein. So most people are predicting Sam Darnold to go first in the draft. Hey, man, if the Browns want to pick Sam Darnold, let the Browns pick Sam Darnold. Then the Giants probably will most likely. Because you got Darnold, Sam Darnold, Josh Rosen, Josh Allen, and Baker Mayfield, Saquon Barkley. They could most likely, or Bradley Chubb, could most likely be top five, top six picks, right? So if I'm Cleveland, If I'm Cleveland, I may draft. I'm drafting Baker Mayfield. I'm drafting Baker Mayfield with my first pick, and then I'm drafting Saquon Barkley with my fourth pick. Now, yes, the Giants need a running back, but the Giants need guards and quarterback and a little successor to Eli. Right, so if I'm the Browns, I pick Baker Mayfield, and then let's say the Giants pick like Sam Darnold, the Jets pick Josh Allen, so that leaves Saquon Barkley or Josh Rosen for the Browns. So with the Browns, they could pick Saquon Barkley because you have your quarterback at Baker Mayfield, but they probably won't do that. But that's what I would do. I would have that Saquon at fourth because I picked Baker Mayfield first, right? So now the Broncos have they need a quarterback. So the Broncos should probably look at Rosen or Allen, Josh Allen. Josh Allen might be a nice pickup for the Broncos, to be honest, looking at Josh Allen. The Colts could possibly get Bradley Chubb. Now, if the Browns, the Jets, or the Giants, or the Broncos pick Baker Mayfield, the Colts can as well. Because let's recap. So we got Darnold, Allen, Rosen, Mayfield, right? So we got the Browns. We got Darnold, Allen, Rosen, Mayfield out of the quarterbacks. I feel like I'm missing somebody. But, hey, now, so Baker Mayfield going to the Colts won't be, because we don't know if I'm the Colts, I might not pick Baker a quarterback that high, knowing that I still have Andrew Luck on my roster. And Andrew Luck just needs time to heal. But how much time does he need? And will he come back the same? So I mean, you know, if I'm picking Mayfield, I'm expecting Mayfield to play. Now, Mayfield could also be a nice addition to the Broncos. Now, let's look at the Buccaneers. Minkah Fitzpatrick, Derwin James, Quentin Nelson, Denzel Ward, even Bradley Chubb could be on their board. If I'm the Bucs, I'd probably pick Derwin James over Minkah Fitzpatrick. I think Derwin James is the best defensive back in the draft. That's just me. So then you got the Chicago Bears. They need linebackers and guards and cornerbacks. They're looking at Denzel Ward as one of the top DBs that they could pick. But the Bears could also pick Minkah Fitzpatrick if the Bucs pick Derwin James. From the Bucs, I'm picking Derwin James. Somebody got you. Derwin James is special, man. Derwin James is special. Now, they also have, well, they have, for the Chicago Bears, they have Tremaine Edmonds, the linebacker out of Virginia Tech. They have Quentin Nelson, the guard out of Notre Dame. Now, Quentin Nelson, guard out of Notre Dame, I've been hearing this name a lot, so you got to keep an eye on him. Then, like I said, Denzel Ward. Then San Francisco 49ers could potentially get Derwin James, depending on how things come out. Roquan Smith out of Georgia, who's outside linebacker, was a very, very, very talented player. So, man, this draft, the Cowboys, though, let's talk about the Cowboys. They're predicting the Cowboys could possibly get Calvin Ridley at the 19th pick, the wide receiver out of Alabama, or Mike Hughes, the cornerback out of Central Florida, DeRon Payne, defensive tackle out of Alabama, Taven Bryan, defensive tackle out of Florida. DeRon Payne is a beast. So, but I for Cowboys, we need DBs and receivers more so than D tackles. So we possibly could come back and get something good second round with that, but I would go for DBs and wide receivers because that Dez Bryant experiment over. That Dez Bryant thing over. And the Rams got the 23rd pick. The Rams just going to be good, man. I'm going to talk about the Rams coming up. The Rams, they're going to be good, man. So, no, not going through everything, but, you know, like I say, different teams, man, the different draft orders. Just kind of looking at the top of the draft, though, like the first five, six picks, first 10 picks, you know, the Raiders, the 49ers, the Bears, the Bucks, the Colts, the Broncos, the Browns, the Jets, the Giants, and the Browns. I just think Baker Mayfield is the best quarterback. If I'm the Browns, I would get Baker and Saquon and go from there. Let's ride. We got a receiver. Dude, not Josh Norman, but the dude who be smoking all the time. He back. So that's just what I would do. So it's just a little quick little draft thing. You know, as it goes every Sunday, I give you more. Matter of fact, that's what I'm starting next. I'm starting next Sunday. One of the first things I'm going to do is we're going to go in-depth on each team. So we're going to take our weeks and we're going to go in-depth on the teams, on at least two teams in the NFL draft. So starting next week, not next Sunday, I'm talking about next Sunday. But starting next week, we're going to go more in-depth on the draft and these different teams. So we're going to take two different teams and we're going to go a little more in-depth on them. So next week, we're going to do the Browns. We're going to start with the Browns and then the Giants. Cause you know I want to give it its justice, give it its time, but you know I don't want to be here talking all day about this thing. We got a lot of topics and stuff to get to, but kind of give you a little sneak preview into that. So NFL is further letting Colin Kaepernick know that they don't fuck with him, that what he did is unacceptable to them, because now their NFL teams are showing up at Johnny Manziel's workouts. For what reason, I don't know. Johnny Manziel is not a NFL caliber starting quarterback. Maybe like a third string, maybe not even that. Johnny Manziel not good enough to be in the NFL. All right, but let me read this to you. Johnny Manziel threw some passes in front of a handful of NFL scouts this week. The first time teams have seen him in action since he flamed out of the league more than 2 years ago. The former Heisman winner, who is currently training with NFL QB guru ahead of an attempted comeback, was on hand for the University of San Diego's Pro Day Thursday. The team did not give a quarterback available. So the 21st, excuse me, the team did not have a quarterback available, so the 2014 first-round pick stepped in. Johnny Manziel threw the day at the University of San Diego. This is what this tweet is saying. 12 teams in attendance, 38 attempts, 2 misses, like rain, strong day, say those in attendance. It did not take long for fans of Colin Kaepernick to notice. As everyone knows by now, the former San Francisco 49er was unemployed last season, not because of his inability to lead a team from under center, but because of his role sparking the protests that swept the NFL last season. Kaepernick is without a doubt a better quarterback than Manziel, and the attention given to the oft-troubled quarterback has some people heated. This is Jim Trotter tweeted this. 13 NFL teams reportedly show up to watch Johnny Manziel throw at USD Pro Day. How many teams would show up if Colin Kaepernick threw at the Pro Day? And James Brady is saying 13 teams watch Johnny Manziel throw today. Zero have called Colin Kaepernick. Vincent Frank is, if Johnny Manziel gets an NFL job before Colin Kaepernick, I have no idea what I do, but it won't be pretty. All right. Captain Shib said, if Johnny Manziel gets a contract before Colin Kaepernick, I will not watch the NFL no more. Well, y'all should have been not watching the NFL for the most part last year. I mean, let's just be real. White folk, racist white folk who control the NFL, who are the owners, they mad because Colin Kaepernick taking a stand against white supremacy. Whenever you take a stand against white supremacy, white people get mad. So, I mean, that's just history tells us that. More indication of why we need to create our own league. More indication of why we need to support ourselves, bet on ourselves, and stop acting like we need these white folk to play football. They need us. Nobody would show up to watch a bunch of white boys play football. Nobody would show up to watch a bunch of white boys play football, but they will show up to watch a whole bunch of black folk play football, hence which makes the football one of the most popular sports in the world, at least in the United States. So, let's just be real, man. Cap, I don't want you to play in the NFL no more. We should not want him to play in the NFL. We should not want none of our great athletes to play in the NFL anymore. Fuck the NFL. That's where we should be. On some fuck the NFL shit. Especially if they acting like this towards Cap. Because the NFL is doing everything to show that they don't care about no brother taking a stand. Right? He took a stand against us, against the flag. That's why I had to go off on OJ dumbass last week for talking about he disrespected. Man, stop that. But once again, we need to create our own and rule our own and do things like that. That's just what needs to happen. Now, not to contradict what I just said about my, because I really don't think black players need to be playing in the NFL if they're going to treat us like this, because they're basically saying you don't have the right to stand up for yourself, to stand up for what's going on in your community. And if you do, then you're going to be shunned for it. Now, but I, as a football enthusiast, I do have to recognize the seriousness or the liveness in the acquisitions that the Los Angeles Rams have made on their football team. They got a squad. They got a squad. Now, what would make this squad even better? If this was a part of an all-black league. But until we get our shit together, you know. But hey, now this makes me want to watch football, but just like last year, I can't give football my attention like that. Can't get the NFL my attention like that. And it's not necessarily the stuff at the owners, but more so the players. Because Cap ain't getting another job in the NFL. So what is we going to do? Because we can't get the NFL our attention like we used to in the past. Because the NFL is showing us who they are. But, you know, the Los Angeles Rams do got a squad, though. So let me just read you some of these names. They have paired Ndamukong Suh with paired Aaron Donald with Ndamukong Suh. So those are their defensive tackles. They've also acquired Marcus Peters, Aqib Talib, and Sam Shields. So you got two shutdown corners and a damn good nickelback. And Sam Shields could play safety as well. He could play safety. I already got LaMarcus Joyner. They added John Sullivan, Sam Ficken, whoever he is, Nickel Roby. They got Connor Barwin. I mean, they got K Kayvon Webster, he's another cornerback. Pharaoh Cooper, that wide receiver. And they're trying to get Odell. They're trying to get Odell. To add Odell with Sammy Watkins and Tavon Austin and all them boys, that'd be nice, man. They get Odell. So it'll be up to the coach to be able to manage the personalities in the room, because you damn sure got personalities in the room. You got some real person. You got Sue, between Sue, Peters, and Tlaib. Between them three, you got some real personalities in the room. So can the coach maintain those personalities? But the Rams got a squad. The Rams definitely got a squad. So will they put it all together? It's good on paper. Will they put it all together to be able to compete with the Eagles and the Vikings? Because them two teams coming too. Them two teams coming. Let's not act like the Rams is out there by themselves. Matter of fact, let me rephrase that. The Eagles are here. The Rams and the Vikings are coming. The Rams and the Vikings were on the heels of the Eagles as well, because the Vikings lost to the Eagles, and which prepared the Eagles to the championship game. But the Rams, nice pickups. So, you know, we're going to see how that goes. But, man, I do think that we need to put more energy and effort into creating our own league. We have to put our own energy into creating our own league and doing for self. Like they said in the Dead Prayer song, we do for self like ants in the colony, organize the hood like a communist. You know what I'm saying? So, moving on, like Maya. I'll be moving on. The NFL has a new catch rule, which we dub in the Dez Bryant rule. The NFL finally deciding that they want to properly define what a catch is after getting it wrong forever, after messing stuff up for so long, right? Let me read this to you. League owners approved modification to the catch rule for the 2018 season during the annual league meeting on Tuesday. The changes passed unanimously on a 32-0 vote, NFL Network insider Ian Rappaport reported. Earlier this week, NFL Senior Vice President of Officiating Al Riveron announced the competition committee's recommendation for simplifying the language of the catch rule. Bitch, if you come down with the ball in your hands, it's a catch. God damn. Right? The new rules defining the catch include control of the ball, 2 feet down or another body part, a football move such as a third step reaching / extending for the line to gain, or ability to perform such an act. The key change in the rule eliminated the going to the ground element of the previous rule. And I hated that. They say you got to possess the ball all the way down when you're going to the ground. Bitch, if you come down with the ball and it don't hit the ground, you got to catch. You got to catch. Why is that so hard? But this is 4 years after Dez Bryant caught the ball, scored a touchdown, and we beat the Packers, and they messed us up. So we don't want to hear that, because it's 4 years later for the Cowboys. It's 4 years later. The NFL hopes the new rule will eradicate some of the frustrations fans, coaches, and players had with apparent catches, like Dez Bryant catch against the Green Bay Packers in 2014, or Steelers tight end Jesse James reverse TD against the Patriots this past season being deemed incomplete because the referees are stupid and the NFL catch rule was stupid. The rule change won't remove all of the gray areas in the rule, nor nullify all confusion. Most also expect the new definition to result in an uptick in fumbles. However, it is a significant step in clarifying a rule that confounded everyone involved in the NFL for years. They said, we didn't know what a catch is, so will we really know what the catch is? Will we really find out what a catch is? Will we? We don't know. But hopefully the new rule changes, the new Dez Bryant rule will allow us to see what the hell is going on between them catches and at home. All right, so time. It's time for the weekly rant. Time. It's time for the weekly rant. Who am I going off on this week? It's time for the weekly. Rant. All right, so this week's weekly rant is aimed at this buddy, Tom Fornelli, a.k.a. Two Chins. Tom Fornelli, a.k.a. Two Chins. He's the subject of this week's weekly rant for giving Vince Young the title of the biggest NFL bust of the BCS era. So we're talking from like 98 to like 2014. Right? So he's trying to say Vince Young was the worst pick to come out. Had the worst career, had the biggest bust from 98 to like 2014, right? Oh, man. So his top five is Robert Griffin, Tim Couch, Ryan Leaf, Jamarcus Russell, and then Vince Young shouldn't even be on this damn list. Stupid. Should be on this list, man. Let me read you what this duck said, right? The NFL draft is in the month and has seen the case in recent years. Quarterbacks are the hot commodities. In my most recent mock draft here at CBS Sports, I have three teams selecting QBs in the top five, and it's entirely possible we could see four taking in the first five picks. When the dust settles, no more than ever quarterback has become the must-have in the NFL. Never mind the fact that we just saw the Eagles lose their franchise quarterback to a torn ACL, only to go on to win the Super Bowl with the third-round pick out of Arizona named Nick Foles. The prevailing theory is that to compete for Super Bowls, you must have a franchise QB. Now, I agree with that portion, that you do not have to have a franchise quarterback to compete for a Super Bowl. You do not have that. We know the formula is great defense and running the ball, being able to control the tempo. You do that, that's a formula for the Super Bowl. If you can add a quarterback to that, then, hey, man, you know. All right, Two Chins. I see you, Two Chins. All right, the problem is there might not be a position in sports that's harder to project. From the amateur level to the professional, we see players who were great in college flame out in the NFL all the time, but it just happens with a greater frequency at the quarterback because the position is much more than measurables. So if four QBs are taken in the first five picks that month, there's a good chance only one of them will emerge as a good quarterback in the NFL. Some might prove to be average backups or out of the league after their first contract, and it's that distinct possibility that inspires this week's Friday Five, which is the part where he gets stupid. This week, Two Chins is ranking five QBs who were good in college, were drafted in the top five, and then just never found it in the NFL. I am limiting the pool to quarterbacks since the beginning of the BCS era, and also the players who are no longer in the league, even with those restrictions, there are still plenty of quarterbacks, whatever. So his top five, like I said, is Robert Griffin. So I don't believe Robert Griffin was a major bust like that. He was a bust, but he wasn't a major top five bust. Tim Couch, yeah. Ryan Leaf, yeah. Jamarcus Russell, yes. Vince Young, hell no. Now let's read what he says. So Robert Griffin, the third, RG3. We start with the Heisman Trophy winner, RG3, was one of the driving forces behind the surge of Baylor's football program, yada, 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 yada. The Redskins paid a heavy price for Griffin as well, sending three first-round picks in the second round to the Rams to move up to number two. Oddly enough, the Redskins drafted Kirk Cousins in the fourth round as well. Griffin's NFL career started well. He won Rookie of the Year in 2012, had a great debut. Injuries would begin pulling up piling up following the season. However, Griffin found himself without a team in 2017. He became a in 2017, 2016, he's with the Browns, and yada, 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 yada. So now we're here 6 years later, and RG3 is out of NFL, and Kirk Cousins just left Washington and as the highest paid player in NFL history. So that did not work out for Robert Griffin. So he did bust, but I wouldn't say one of the biggest. We know Jamarcus Russell is the biggest. Jamarcus Russell, Ryan Leaf, Tim Couch, I give that. Tim Couch, for y'all young bucks, Tim Couch came out of Kentucky back in 99. Kentucky was actually good at one point. They weren't good, good, but, you know, they had quarterbacks, Tim Couch. You know? And they had somebody else, I don't know. But Couch was the first lesson a lot of NFL teams were going to learn over the next two decades. Couch was the quarterback at Kentucky when Hal Mumme and a little known offensive coordinator named Mike Leach brought an offense to college football that hadn't been seen at that level yet, right? The air raid offense, Couch put up ridiculous numbers with the Wildcats, throwing for 8,159 yards and 73 touchdowns with a 63% completion percentage. His final two passes in Lexington, those numbers helped lead the Browns to take him in the first round, picking 99. And he went to the Browns. He started 59 games. He had a 58% pass percentage through 67 interceptions and 64 touchdowns. So he wasn't the man. He went to the Browns and claimed out. Ryan Leaf was the second overall pick in 98. He was after Peyton. And, Ryan Leaf was hot garbage. Ryan Leaf, I don't even remember how long he played. He was yelling at people in the locker room. He just never really put it together. First of all, he was a major bust. The Chargers took him at number two in the month leading up to the draft were one long debate between Leaf and Peyton Manning. Well, the fat Manning went on to become one of the greatest quarterbacks in NFL history, and Ryan Leaf didn't. Secondly, Leaf was never all that great to begin with. If you look at his college numbers, it says 2 chance, right? While he had a solid season in 1996 with Washington State, Leaf's only great season was in 1997 when he threw for 3,968 yards, 34 touchdowns. When you look closer, though, you see that Leaf only completed 53% of his passes in college. That was a red flag that was ignored because of the size and strength of his arm as teams were too busy looking for measurables, yada, yada, yada. Leaf fell into the latter group. He only started 21 games at 48% pass percentage, and he ain't played football a long time. Jamarcus Russell, the biggest heist in NFL history. Now, I'm going to read this and then I'm going to go off, right? Jamarcus Russell, yeah, man, he shouldn't have been drafted. He came off that LSU team that won that national championship, and Jamarcus Russell cashed in. They drafted him. He had 23 interceptions, 18 touchdowns. He drafted him in 07, three seasons, 25 starts. Last played in 09. Jamarcus Russell, he shouldn't have been drafted that high. It's just teams were stupid because he had a big arm. Now they're saying Vince Young. Now let me read this. If we're going simply by the bust metric, Young doesn't deserve to be number one on that list. But this is my list, and I have him there for a very specific reason. So now the bitch in him is coming out. The bitch in 2 chins is coming out. Right? Now, I ain't gonna give you the Laura Ingram 2 chins. But this is some whole shit that you're talking about. Well, because if he don't have the numbers, the metrics to put him in the bust category, then why the fuck is he in the bust category? Why is he in the bust category, 2 chins, Tom Forini, 2 chins? I don't get it. I thought Vince Young was amazing in college, and I was convinced he continued to owe me in the NFL. It never quite happened. That's Jeff Fisher's fault, 2 chins. Hey, your wife said you didn't awe her in the bedroom 2 chins. How about that? Your last couple girlfriends said you didn't awe them in the bedroom. How about that? Let's write articles about your lackluster bedroom performances 2 chins, right? Since you want to throw that out. He didn't awe me. Vince, you sound like Skip Bayless. These players are living up to my personal expectations that I set on them because all of these players, they have to do what I want them to do. And if they don't, then, oh, my goodness, they're not good people. Oh, my goodness. Shut up, 2 chins. In 6 NFL seasons, 5 with the Titans, Young started 50 games. He threw for 8,946 yards, 46 touchdowns, 51 interceptions, 57 6.9, basically 60% completion passes. Rushed for 1,400 yards, 12 touchdowns. Vince Young's situation was fucked from the beginning because Jeff Fisher didn't really want him. Jeff Fisher was not a great, the greatest loser in NFL coaching history, Jeff Fisher, messed Vince Young's career up because Jeff Fisher was not, he did not even try to help Vince Young be successful. Vince Young put up those numbers despite his head coach not wanting him to be successful. See, two chins, you conveniently left that out. But fuck all that. You can't put somebody at the number one college, biggest bust in the NFL draft ever because he didn't. You felt like he just didn't please you personally. Man, the man numbers do not say bust. That's bullshit. And to put him at number one is some fuck shit. Hey, two chins, Tom Perini, you a whole hoe out here. You a whole hoe out here for putting Vince Young at the number one bust. And see, this is the shit I be talking about, right? This is the reason why the Fix Sports Podcast exists. This is the reason why the Freedom Train Network exists. Because fuckboys like Tom Perini making articles like this and putting out these accusations and putting out these headlines like this, this negative propaganda against our people and our community like this for no reason. Now, if you just said Jamarcus Russell was the biggest bust in NFL history, ain't no problem with that. Ain't no problem. I say that. Jamarcus Russell was the biggest bust in NFL football history. But for you to be talking about Vince Young, man, no. Vince Young is not the biggest bust in NFL draft history. No way, no how you could justify that. And then your reason is, this is my list, and I have him there for a very specific. You sound like a bitch. That's what you sound like, Two Chins. Two Chins, you sound like a bitch. Well, I know his numbers don't have him as a bust, but I'm going to put him as a bust game. Because, shit, I just want to put him as a bust. You sound like a schoolyard female talking about, I'm going to just put him there because I want to put him there because he didn't match my personal expectations that I dreamed about him having. Well, your wife says that you didn't live up to her expectations in the bedroom, Two Chins. How about that? You ain't good in life, Two Chins. How about that? I'm going to put you at the top of my list for fuckboys of 2018 because this is like, and see, this is the reason why my weekly rant exists. Now, it's one thing to give an opinion based off. Matter of fact, I don't even want your opinion. It's to put out information based off of facts. If somebody sucks, they suck. I can't defend motherfuckers sucking. I can't defend that. Jamarcus Russell, you sucked. Tim Couch, you sucked. Ryan Leaf, you sucked. Robert Griffin, you didn't suck, but you sucked, right? Robert Griffin's biggest point, biggest issue was his ego. He couldn't get over himself and realizing that you can't, this ain't college football, right? So Robert Griffin wasn't the sharpest knife in the drawer. He wasn't that smart. He wasn't the lightest flame on the candle, right? But for Tom Perini, Two Chins, to go around talking about that Vince Young, Young don't deserve to be number one on that list, but this is my list, and I have him there for a very specific reason. You sound like a bitch. That's what you sound like. Like a straight hoe for that. Like, come on, man. We grown men. Pettiness has to stop. But once again, these folk don't care about members of our community like we should. So when you got people talking and trashing our people in our community, they got to come get them. So Tom Perini, you finna get your whole journalism set bust wide open. I'm calling you out, Thomas. I'm calling you out for being a hoe. I'm calling you, Tommy. I'm calling you because you's a whole one. You's a whole for that one. Come on, man. Stop. Stop the madness. Stop the madness. Vince Young is not no damn bust. He is not no damn bust. Jeff Fisher in that porn mustache is a bust. Mr. 79 is a bust for being a horrible coach, but not Vince Young. Y'all got to be kidding me, man. You've got to be kidding me. Come on, Tom Perini, man. You stupid for this, Tom Frenney. Come on, man. We ain't even put no real journalism into that. You just went straight off of some bitch-ass feelings that you had about Vince Young because you personally don't like Vince Young. Fuck out of here, Tom Frenney, man. I ain't even going to spend no more time on your soft ass, Tom Frenney. Hey, man, this is the Fix Sport Podcast, and that is my weekly rant wrapping up on Tom Frenney, a.k.a. Two Chins. Fuck out of here with that weak-ass explanation on why you made Vince Young the number one biggest bust in the BCS era. Nope, you don't get it. No, 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 no. No, 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 no. Hey, man, I'm Joseph Ward, man. You know, I love giving y'all this fix, giving you your Fix Your Sports update. And one of my favorite parts is the weekly rant. I like going off on the craziness, right? But we got to have balance in this universe, man. We got to defend ourselves, right? Hey, man, remember, every Monday, the Fix Sports Podcast comes out on the Freedom Train Network, so make sure you be out there waiting for it. If you subscribe to either our YouTube channel, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, you're going to get the notification come straight to your phone. Bam, it's going to tell you the Fix Sports Podcast is there. All you got to do is click on it, and you get your fix, and you are ready to go. Amen. Remember, every Monday, the Fix Sports Podcast. Every Wednesday, you get the Freedom Train podcast series. You also get the live showing of Office Hours with Professor Carl Tone Jones, Erica Tober. Every Thursday, you get the Lessons from the Screen episode with Patrick Irvin. Every Friday, you get the Office Hours with Professor Carl Tone Jones, Erica Tober podcast, which is available on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. You also, well, every Saturday, now every Saturday, you're getting Tea Time, Black Women's Talk. And Saturdays, you're also getting the On the Shoulders of Giants podcast, which is available on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. And if you don't know, now you know. Don't tell nobody something that you can't back it up. That's just how life is. Hey, hey, and hey, that's just all I got to say about that. Two fingers in the air, spinning apart, because we out of here. Y'all know how I go down. Peace.
I am the greatest.
I've called the president. President, we need the National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board.
His heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lynx is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody ruthless.